This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of March 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of March. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And we're delighted to have as our third reader this week the Chronicle's chief reporter, Andrew Napier.
Hello.
And I'm your reporter. Your reporter? No, I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: police call for review of City Pub. City opposes plans for 3,000 homes at Airfield. And council on the edge of a bleak financial precipice. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was, police call for review of City Pub. Crime concerns after man assaulted outside. Police have taken action against a city centre pub following recent incidents. They have requested a review of the licence for the Broadway pub on the corner of Colebrook Street and the Broadway. A notice by the door says the licence will be reviewed. It was issued on Monday, February the 19th, just weeks after a man in his 20s was assaulted outside the pub, formerly known as Pitcher and Piano. An investigation was launched over the incident in the early hours of Saturday, January the 27th. A Hampshire police spokesman said the licence review related to two incidents. They confirmed they had no updates on the January 27th witness. At the time, a police spokesman said, "We have been making inquiries to establish the circumstances of what happened, but if you witnessed this incident and haven't yet spoken to us, please call 101, quoting the crime reference number 442-400-38410. The licence review application said, "The City Council, as the licensing authority, hereby gives notice that it has received an application from Hampshire Constabulary for review under the Licensing Act 2003 for the premises known as the Broadway, 57 Colebrook Street. The grounds for the application are the prevention of crime and disorder and public safety. The deadline for representations to the council licensing manager is March the 15th. Marston's, which operate the bar, said they were cooperating with the council. A spokesman said, "We are working with the police and licensing team to ensure a satisfactory outcome from the review. The council has been asked to comment."
City opposes plans for 3,000 homes at Airfield. Winchester City Council has confirmed its opposition to plans for 3,000 homes on a Hampshire airfield. The land at Popham Airfield has been earmarked for development in the latest draft of Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council's local plan. Fears have been raised by the Diva Society that a garden village would boost plans for a new town at Mitchell Dever Station. City Councillor Stephen Godfrey, a Conservative who represents Wanston and Mitchell Dever, asked civic chiefs about the authority's response. Speaking at the full council meeting on February the 22nd, he said, "The cabinet member is aware of the inclusion of a residential housing allocation of 3,000 homes at Popham Airfield in the Reg 18 local plan update by Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council. The new town proposal has caused great consternation among residents of my ward, particularly those in Mitchell Dever Station, which adjoins the Popham Airfield site. Apart from the imposition of a large new settlement in the countryside on our boundary, the proposal includes several significant infrastructure requirements within Winchester District. What dialogue has taken place between Winchester City Council and Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council over the inclusion of Popham Airfield in their local plan update?" Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Place and Local Plan, said, "Winchester City Council does not agree that a new development in the countryside, such as what is proposed for Popham, is the most carbon or socially efficient way to build a community. We have serious questions about whether this proposal is even deliverable. We were surprised to see the proposal for Popham come up in Basingstoke's local plan without any consultation, even though it comes right up to the Winchester border. The proposal includes the use of local facilities at Micheldever Station, including the station itself, instead of providing its own or linking to their own communities, which was completely unexpected. It's a risk that a portion of the site is considered to be previously developed land, so we could end up with an unsuitable and unwanted speculative development with major negative impacts on our area. The Deva Society and many residents have written to me to express their fears if it goes ahead. I'm urging residents to express their opinion to the Basingstoke Local Plan Consultation. Their opinions will provide useful context for our neighbouring district. The Council's obvious need is to protect the land around the hamlet of Micheldever Station. We will be opposing the proposals.
Council on the edge of a bleak financial precipice. More than £2 billion of public spending on local services has been approved by Hampshire County Council. A total of £2.6 billion was agreed at the full council meeting on Thursday, February the 22nd, together with the level of council tax for next year. But the meeting heard that the council is on the edge of a financial precipice. By April the 1st, Hampshire County Council's portion of council tax will increase by a total of 4.99%, of which 2% will go towards adults' social care. This is the highest that can be imposed without holding a referendum. This equates to an annual charge of £1,153.24 for a Band D property, an increase of £72.99 per year, or approximately £1.40 a week. The increase will generate an extra £39 million towards the delivery of services. Councillor Rob Humby, County Council leader, said, "Each year, one of the most testing tasks we have is to deliver a balanced budget, carefully managing public funds to ensure that they have the greatest impact in serving the people of Hampshire. We have a strong track record of achieving this, but it's getting much harder each year to do so. The funds that we do have simply don't stretch as far as they used to, as demand in key areas like children's and adult social care continues to rise, and costs increase too, particularly in areas like school transport, where there are growing numbers of children with disabilities and additional needs who require support. The extra pressure we are facing across all council services will push up our costs by an extra £152 million from this April." Leader of the Liberal Democrat group, Councillor Keith House, said the council's position is bleak and sits on the edge of a steeper financial precipice. Councillor House said, "I would like to thank Rob for outlining again how stark the financial position is. It is bleak, and this has never been bleaker. I don't think any of us ever expected it to be this bleak. The problem is that Rob outlines the problem, but not the solution. We know the only solution is to replace the MPs who keep voting for this poverty in public services across our country." Councillor Humby said, "We're already consulting local people on options to help towards meeting the £132 million budget shortfall expected from April 2025. We are encouraging as many people as possible to have their say in our future services consultation before March 31st. Alongside revenue budget plans, the County Council has also approved new capital spending of £880.6 million over the next 3 years, aiming to boost jobs and the local economy and contribute towards the authority's commitment to tackling climate change."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor. Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. We start with the death announcements. Baker, Alan Baker, who died peacefully at Shawford Springs Nursing Home, aged 95. Britton, Christopher Michael Britton, on the 7th of February, aged 77. Drain, Mary Drain, who died on the 3rd of February, aged 94. Drinkwater, Trevor Sydenham Drinkwater, suddenly and unexpectedly after a heart attack on the 6th of February, aged 63. French, Gilbert Edward French, died peacefully in Winchester Hospice on the 14th of February. Goodyear, Royston Goodyear, died peacefully on the 5th of February, aged 95. Hall, Marion Elizabeth Hall, died on the 8th of February after a short illness. Merritt, Kathleen Mary Merritt, died peacefully at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 76. Morgan, Lynn Morgan, died peacefully in Winchester on the 10th of February. Osmond, Andrew William Osmond, died on the 16th of February, aged 57. Salmon, Anne Rita Marjorie Salmon, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 3rd of February. Seymour Jones, Cynthia Ann Seymour Jones, died on the 20th of February. Whitfield, Patricia Whitfield, died peacefully on the 11th of February, aged 89. And Pat Whitfield was one of our volunteers for many, many years. Wood, Penelope Jane Wood, on the 9th of February at Hawthorne's care home, aged 78. That concludes the death notices. Andrew, could you read Christian comment, please?
A Brilliant Portrayal of Jesus by Nigel Hemming. The Chosen is a historical TV drama about the life and ministry of Jesus and his followers. This is the first ever multi-season, episode-based, Netflix-style portrayal of Jesus. Already seen by over 100 million viewers worldwide, it has drawn critical acclaim and is now well into its fourth season. There is so much detail missing from the Gospels, so this series seeks to imagine how the characters' lives and relationships play out in and around the known biblical narrative. With excellent writing and high-quality production, viewers are drawn into the story in a way which the written word sometimes struggles to achieve. Predictably, a few have criticised the scenes which don't appear in the biblical text, but overwhelmingly the series has drawn praise for the way in which it places Jesus and his disciples in a realistic historical context and portrays them as distinctly human and relatable. While the superb sets and costumes serve to portray the historical context of first century Galilee and Judea, the drama goes deeper still to bring the cultural background alive. I have read the Gospels for well over 40 years, but this series has helped me understand in a brand new way how the tensions between Jews and Gentiles played out in everyday life and what a stifling impact the Roman occupiers had on everyone. I have often heard the disciples described as a motley bunch, but The Chosen really brings home the incredible variety of conflicted and imperfect personalities in the group. Simple imagining their backstories adds depth to each character and explains the reason for the numerous squabbles and disagreements. For example, Matthew, the tax collector, is completely disowned by his family and shunned his community for collaborating with Rome. None of the others understand why Jesus would choose him as a follower, and their relentless anger and mockery towards him continues right through the first two seasons. While the history, culture, and relationships all draw you brilliantly into the story, it is the central portrayal of Jesus which most captivates the imagination. The way he is just so human, dry and gently sarcastic, great company, positive and fun, He is someone you would just love to spend time with. The miracles are frequent, and as lives are changed in a moment, you see the impact not only on the person who has been healed, but on their family and friends, and ultimately their community. Jesus teaches the crowds with authority and acts with incredible kindness, generosity, and compassion. His only negative emotions are directed towards the Jewish rabbis who criticize him publicly and plot in secret to share news of his law-breaking activity with their higher authorities. This is a Jesus who I can't imagine anyone not wanting to at least find out more about, if not choose to follow. Whether or not you are a believer, the Chosen will seriously enhance your view of who Jesus is. I sincerely recommend that you check it out. It is available to stream free on their website, thechosen.tv. Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got first.
And this from G.N. Barrett, headed Cut Staff. Councils keep stating they have to save money. One way would be to cut the number of staff, not to deny the public more services. The recycling centres are a sure requirement for the public. If the appointment system was scrapped, it would be a lot easier. Plus, it should then reduce fly tipping. Councils need to compromise, but that will be the day. They should keep a team of two or three staff and open alternate days. For instance, Monday, Oresford, Tuesdays, another recycling centre. Keeping one open each day could help save some money. It's an idea. And that's from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Oresford.
Blown away. This comes from Tina Richards. I had the pleasure of taking my 80-year-old mother to see Guys and Dolls at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. Initially, I hadn't set high expectations, especially considering we hadn't ventured up to London's West End, as we usually would, due to my mother's limited mobility. Little did we know that this production was put on by the local amateur dramatic club Encore Youth Theatre. Our experience, however, exceeded all expectations. From the moment it started, we were captivated by the extraordinary talent displayed by these young performers. The acting and singing were nothing short of outstanding, showcasing a level of skill and professionalism that rivaled even the most seasoned performers. My mother and I were completely blown away by the calibre of the performance. In fact, I dare say it may have surpassed what we would have witnessed in London's theatre district. What truly stood out was the sheer talent emanating from each and every actor and actress. Their passion and dedication to their craft were palpable, leaving us in awe. It was difficult to believe that these individuals were so young and relatively new to the stage. Their performance exuded the confidence and expertise of seasoned professionals. We found ourselves thoroughly engrossed in the production, swept away by the infectious energy and charisma of the cast. Every song, every scene was executed flawlessly, drawing us deeper into the world of Guys and Dolls. It was a testament to the hard work and commitment of the entire cast and crew, whose collective efforts brought the show to life in such a remarkable manner. So enamoured were we by the performance that we've decided to attend again tonight. Such was the impact of the show, we simply couldn't resist the opportunity to relive the magic once more. It's a testament to the enduring powers of live theatre and the incredible talent that exists within local communities like Winchester. And that was, as I said, Tina Richards, Somborne Park Road, Little Somborne, Stockbridge.
Graveyard Gem. It was good to read about the work being done at St Giles Hill Graveyard. Volunteers joined bid to bring back elm trees. Chronicle letters, February the 15th. The graveyard is a gem, and the elm trees being planted there will be a welcome addition. However, it isn't quite correct to say that there are no elms resistant to Dutch elm disease in the Winchester area. I know of at least one, which was planted in a corner of the West Hill Cemetery in 1988, in memory of my late husband. Admittedly, it is a solitary specimen, but it is still there and maturing very nicely. That's from Carol Orchard, North View, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this is from Rose Burns, headed Green Artery. In the Chronicle article published on February the 14th, quotes, uncertainty over date for demolition of River Park Leisure Centre, it was said that the council has funds in place to demolish the old River Park Leisure Centre building. Green councillor Malcolm Wallace asked Cabinet about the declining state of the building, saying it's difficult to understand the delays and why a site in a prime Winchester location is being left to go to rack and ruin. Friends of River Park agree with Councillor Wallace, except we would point out that this is not a site in a prime Winchester location. It is an important part of the park that currently forms a vital part of the city's main green artery, running from Winnell Moors Nature Reserve to St Cross. The Leisure Centre building is increasingly derelict and urgently needs to be knocked down, perhaps to be replaced by green grassland until the public can have a say in what happens next. It is an eyesore, a health and safety issue, a magnet for antisocial behaviour and vandalism, and it will continue to cost the tax-paying residents of Winchester at least £80,000 per annum to keep it as it is. If the funds are in place, why the delay? Moreover, the recreation ground is not currently being properly managed by the City Council. Photos taken show areas of the park which are waterlogged, muddy and dangerous. Surely, after the heavy rainfall experienced recently, consideration should be given to cancelling stroke postponing events or to protecting the worst areas of the fields for the benefit and safety of all users of the park. And last year's large events left behind a mess which hasn't yet been tackled by the WCC, despite persistent requests for action. Winchester residents deserve the opportunity of putting forward alternative, viable, desirable uses for River Park site. The only way of securing this is to stop the council's misguided plans. Friends of River Park, invite your support for our continuing challenge. And then there's a link which is as follows. One word, lowercase, justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Friends of River Park, all one word. And that was from Rose Burns on behalf of Friends of River Park, Hyde, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Eileen Berry, and it's on the subject of the hospitals. Within the last few years, we have quadrupled our students within the city of Winchester, and we know that in future more will be coming. There is no doubt that we are going to need, not just for the elderly, who, by the way, have less chance of getting to Basingstoke and Andover, in the case of emergencies such as heart attacks, strokes and accidents within the home, that is only a quarter of the problem. Access to cars being one of them, taking us further away from home, which is a long, long way for many of us. Then we come to the younger generation, who are here 9 months of the year. And I know from the language being used that more are going to come from Southampton and further around. That being said, we are so needy of A&E. The thinking behind this is ludicrous, that being my opinion and of many others. I have a young family around me. Their ages are from 60 to 1, and they are all saying, where on earth is your thinking for the future? Winchester Hospital could be incredible. With the money you're proposing for the new hospital and whatever you have got in your mind for Winchester Hospital is ridiculous. It is in a prime position. It has the ability to be scrapped from the inside and started again. The shell is there. Why would you want to go and spend millions and millions, which will have to be covering every aspect? There is no sense to it. The inconvenience and fear you're giving to the people of Winchester is appalling. Let's be honest. This is central to these villages and areas of Winchester. We are central. The basis is already here. Forgive me for being cynical about public consultation. Having been a city councillor for 16 years, the language that I hear is that it does not matter what we consult people about. We're going to do it anyway. I could be wrong, but that's what I think is happening. What will they do with the hospital when that goes? I would not be surprised if it is not already being spoken about commercially. I leave that to your imagination of what could possibly be. Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
This is from Monica Gill. It's headlined Permit Planet. Can someone tell me what planet Hampshire County Council were on when they took over the issuing of visitors' parking permits? In the past, a parking permit was in paper form, which could then be used by anyone visiting. But now you have to give the registration number of the vehicle every time someone visits. You could also purchase scratch cards if you had more than one visitor. But after spending the best part of Monday ringing different departments, I was told they no longer issue scratch cards. Life is too short for me to spend my time ringing or emailing My Permit, the company doing the work for Hampshire County Council. I've better things to do than that. Hampshire County Council needs to rethink this ridiculous system. Monica Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester.
And from Keith Hatter, headed Try a Blindfold. Many thanks to Mrs. A. Wilkinson, Chronicle, February the 15th, for informing me that a photograph appeared in the Hampshire Chronicle showing our MP apparently demonstrating that pedestrian passage along Jewry Street is not impeded. If this was Mr. Brown's intention, I am amazed and even slightly disgusted that he has the time to perform a stunt that encourages the retention of a situation that makes the environment more awkward and dangerous for people such as me. If he wishes to qualify himself to opine on this matter, he is welcome to accept my standing invitation to anyone to don a blindfold and be guided by me along Jewry Street. This would require decency and courage. The only person who has accepted this challenge is Councillor Jackie Porter. And that was from Keith Hatter, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Kate Cooper. We had no say. We heartily agree with Richard Wetherall's comments regarding the crass monotony of development on King's Barton, letters in the Chronicle on February the 1st. However, we must correct his frankly ridiculous assumption that the closure of Andover Road has anything to do with the residents of Andover Road. Nothing could be further from the truth. We were never approached by Carla Holmes regarding this, and had we been, it would have made no difference whatsoever to our strong objection to a development of 2,000 houses being built on the open fields opposite our house. The decision was made entirely by Carla Holmes for their own purposes. Kate Cooper, Andover Road, Winchester.
This next letter is from Rachel Masker and headlined Short Memories. It's a funny old world when an ex-city councillor expelled for failing to attend a single meeting for 6 months is selected as Conservative parliamentary candidate for Winchester, albeit 24 years later. As a former Hampshire Chronicle reporter, I wrote the front page news story when Flick Drummond sparked controversy by failing to resign from Winchester City Council after moving to the USA. Mrs. Drummond left in summer 1999 when her stockbroker husband got a job on Wall Street. Despite moving 3,000 miles away, she hoped to complete her term and avoid triggering a by-election in her city centre ward of St. Bartholomew. Mrs. Drummond, who still had 9 months to serve, didn't claim any allowances when abroad and kept in touch with residents by letter, phone and email, she said. But a fellow ward councillor, the late Sue Nelms, a Lib Dem, complained her casework increased dramatically and constituents were left in limbo. As reported by the Chronicle in February 2000, a city council spokesman said, "The chief executive confirmed with Mrs. Drummond that she had not attended any relevant committee meeting for the period of 6 months, and she had not obtained prior consent of the council for her absence. Her membership of the council has therefore lapsed under Section 85 of the Local Government Act of 1972, and she is no longer a member." Mrs. Drummond's website and election leaflet list her public appointments, including MP for Meon Valley since 2019, MP for Portsmouth South 2015-17, and her stint on the City Council 1996 to 2000, but draw a veil over her expulsion. Not exactly transparent. Mrs. Drummond clearly hopes Winchester voters have shorter political memories than me. And that's from Rachel Masker, Sutton Scotney.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we move on to the editorial comment, please, Nikki.
And this is headed "The Crisis in Local Government Funding." It is rare for local government finance to dominate the national news agenda, but the growing crisis at many authorities, including Hampshire, has forced it into the spotlight. Many councils are teetering on the edge of financial collapse, caught between rising costs and insufficient funding. The cost burden is being driven by the mounting expense of paying for adult social care and school transport, especially children with special educational needs who usually do not go to the school just down the road. The problem is that councils are increasingly unable to meet their costs, hence the proposals to axe services such as museums and recycling centres. The vast majority of money for local authorities comes not from council tax, parking charges or business rates, but from grants from central government. Simply put, these have been squeezed by governments since 2010, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. On the good news front, Winchester City Council has dodged this bullet, largely because the services mentioned are not its responsibility. So what needs to be done? In an ideal world, the government would properly fund local government, but there seems little sign of that, even if there is a change of ruling party after the next general election. Earlier this month, the Chronicle printed an article by Yinan Ezra, a former senior county council officer, who proposed that Hampshire follow the model of Wiltshire and have a single unitary authority to cover the county outside Southampton and Portsmouth. There would be massive savings in the backroom functions, but at the cost of local government becoming more remote from the people it serves. Would that be a price worth paying?
Thank you, Deborah. You've got first person, please.
Yes. It's written by Khalid Aziz and entitled "Intimidation on the Rise." It is spring 1977. I am a callow reporter newly transferred from radio to television. An early assignment. Apparently, there's going to be a gathering of 20,000 Muslims in a field just outside Bradford for a religious weekend. It should be quite a spectacle. And BBC TV News want a reporter for the 6 o'clock on Saturday. You're it. With my news editor's words echoing my ears, I gather up my allotted film crew and head off to Bradford. There they were, thousands of white-clad Muslims, strictly men only, milling about and listening to speeches. My rudimentary Urdu, learned at school in Pakistan, told me the mullahs were encouraging those present to revere God and improve their religious ways. My cameraman hoisted his weighty Ariflex to his shoulder. With a sound man in tow, we headed towards the field to get a closer look. There was a significant police presence. As we were about to go through the gate, a mob of about 30 young men advanced towards us, shouting menacingly, "The Prophet, peace be upon him, has said no good Muslim should allow any likeness to be made of him. We forbid you to take pictures." I knew from my religious studies classes in Pakistan that technically he was correct. Muhammad had made this stricture to combat the tendency in the 7th century towards idolatry. This is why you see no pictures but only calligraphy decorating mosques. The Islamic side of my family are Sunnis, and Sufi Sunnis to boot. Theirs is a rather more relaxed sect, and you would see photos adorning the drawing rooms of my family's houses. However, this crowd weren't looking for a theological discussion. A chief inspector intervened. I thought I ought to defend journalism. "Put your camera away." "But I'm on the Queen's Highway and I'm from the BBC. It's my right to film what I like." Amazing how priggish a young, wet-behind-the-ears reporter can be. "I'm telling you to put your camera away or I will arrest you for conduct likely to cause a breach of the peace." "But you should be defending my journalistic rights." "Look, son, There are 20,000 of them. I have 50 coppers, and there are just three of you. Put your camera away. Thus, I learned what policing by consent means. We put the camera away, retreated to a nearby hill, and filmed on a long lens. The story was still about a religious gathering, but it must have been one of the earliest TV reports to cover culture clash. Only we didn't call it that in those days. Fast forward four decades, and intimidation seems to rule even more strongly. Whether it's the speaker allegedly being threatened with deselection during last week's Gaza vote shambles, or pro-Palestinian supporters turning up outside the houses of MPs. In London, the Met, still too busy rooting out bad apples, like the chief inspector on that Bradford field, seems to interpret consent as being that those that can shout the loudest. Intimidated MPs wring their hands. Some resign, citing the pressure of so-called media threats. No doubt those who are left are thinking about bringing in new laws, when what is really needed is enforcement of the existing laws. The police are not solely culpable. Whatever your thoughts on slavery, and I hope we are on the same page in condemning it, the toppling of Colson's statue in Bristol was, at least to the man on the Clapham omnibus, clearly criminal damage. However, guided by the judge, the jury acquitted those accused, the so-called Colston Four. Swiftly, the Colston name was eradicated from buildings endowed from the profits of his 18th century slaver. Were those decisions bowing to the zeitgeist, or intimidated by the thought of what might be unleashed by those now apparently untrammelled by the laws of property? Intimidation appears to be winning.
And now we have a couple of items from Belgarum. The alternative look, please, Andrew.
Okay, the first one is headlined Roadworks Tackle Puddle. New roadworks have been carried out in Winchester city centre to get rid of a near permanent puddle. The work is being carried out on St George's Street to the rear of Marks and Spencer's by Hampshire Highways. According to One Dot Network, the work is to remove ponding issues and realign gullies along a section of pavement. Curbstones will also be put in and the level raised to stop puddles forming. A new curb will also be installed from one of the bus stops to the Marks and Spencer loading bay. The bus stops are closed until the work is completed. It is being carried out in response to a permanent, persistent puddle near the bus stops, which has been highlighted in the Hampshire Chronicle's Belgarum column. This puddle has been present in one form or another since 2022 and has been caused by an installed drain being higher than the surrounding pavement. During its lifetime, the puddle has been a mini ice rink, hosted ducks, and been a litter depository. One Dot Network is estimating that the work will be completed by Wednesday, February the 28th. Hampshire County Council has been asked for further information, as has Marks and Spencer's, because of the work is disrupting their deliveries. And the second one is highlighted, Winnie Flies Home to Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine falcon has returned. Winnie was recently spotted on the cathedral's webcam, which monitors her nest. Last year, she and her partner, William, had one chick, which was named Rosie, after the cathedral ran a competition. Keith Betton, chairman of Hampshire Ornithological Society, expects this year's eggs to be laid around mid-March. He said, Winnie, our long-standing female peregrine, is back at the cathedral and the cameras are now live again.
Thank you. And right, now we have announcements and what's on. Firstly, we have two items at the Theatre Royal. On Saturday the 9th of March at 7 p.m. there is Vanya, which is adapted from Anton Chekhov's work. Tickets are £16 from the box office on 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And on Tuesday the 12th of March at 7:30pm at the Theatre Royal, Hound of the Baskervilles. Well, I will say this is a staged radio play, so just be aware it's not quite like a live play on the stage, but they are reading it as a radio play live. And that's £15 again, theatre box office 01962 840 440. And Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 9th of March at 7:30pm, Baroque Masterpieces with the Wainfleet Singers and Florilegium, presenting Bach's Magnificat and Handel's Dettingen Te Deum. Tickets from £15 from the Cathedral box office, and that's 01962 857 275. That's 857 275. A lighting up time ends on Friday the 1st of March at 6:45am and begins at 5:47pm. And on Wednesday the 6th of March it ends at 6:38am and begins at 5:56pm. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. 861229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this, following on from the letter, under fire MP defends herself. Winchester's Conservative parliamentary candidate has said she has dedicated herself to public life after news resurfaced of her disqualification from the City Council 24 years ago. Flick Drummond was forced to forfeit her Winchester City Council seat as ward councillor for St Bartholomew in 2000 due to not attending enough meetings. Mrs Drummond, who was 36 at the time, moved to America when her husband got a job in Wall Street. She was disqualified in line with council rules that councillors must attend at least one meeting every 6 months. Mrs Drummond, who is currently MP for the Meon Valley and hoping to become Winchester's next MP, said, "When people drag up events like this from 25 years ago, they do so only for political reasons. I have dedicated myself to public life in Hampshire since 1988 because I believe it is right people give back to their community. This I have done, and my record speaks for itself. Events back then related to the last 6 months of my term in office and the desire to avoid an expensive by-election. I claimed no allowances and continued to work as a councillor. It is interesting how this comes up again in an election year. The salient issue for the Hampshire Chronicle and its readers must be whether those who have brought it up have any political affiliation. There is plenty that could be said about Winchester's Liberal Democrat candidate, Danny Chambers, for example, and his mocking social media posts about disabled people from just a few years ago when he stood in North Cornwall as the local parliamentary candidate there. Perhaps this newspaper's readers would care to ask him about that, because no one is above scrutiny. I take the view that if it is okay to discuss what happened with me in 1999, and it absolutely is, then we should be discussing what this Lib Dem did in 2019. I think most people consider this fair." Before leaving for America, Mrs. Drummond consulted her fellow ward councillors, Sue Neames and Dominic Hiscock, both Lib Dems, and neither objected to her continuing her role at this time. However, following her disqualification, former councillor Nelms said that casework increased dramatically for her and Councillor Hiscock. The Chronicle reported on Mr. Chambers' social media tweets and his apology in January 2022.
Knit and Crochet Group is launched. A community combating homelessness has launched a knit and crochet group to help people meet others and learn a new skill. Emmaus Hampshire's Knit and Crochet Group meets on Thursdays at 11 in the morning at the Green Roof Cafe in Bar End. Anyone can join and no booking is required. Sarah Smith, who runs the group, said, "Whether you're a complete beginner an improver, or if you've been knitting or crocheting for years, I hope the group will offer people the chance to learn from each other, try something new, and enjoy the social side. I love the buzz of teaching people and absolutely believe that anyone can do it. Some people might come along to the group with a particular project in mind, such as a scarf, a hat, or a bag, whereas others might just want to explore new techniques or try something different, like knitting a mushroom or a guinea pig. Knitting and crocheting can be so varied and versatile, and I'm hoping that it's also an opportunity to meet new people and have some fun. So that, if you want to go along, is at Bar End at the Green Roof Cafe on a Thursday at 11 in the morning.
This is headlined Winter Fuel Payment Aid Scheme. A Hampshire charity that supports older people is appealing for residents to consider donating their winter fuel payment. Age Concern Hampshire says the payments will make a significant difference in ensuring individuals receive the care and support they need during the winter months and beyond. The winter fuel payment is an annual tax-free grant for those aged 66 or older, aimed at covering the cost of heating expenses, regardless of financial status, with the yearly allowance ranging from £250 to £600. The charity says contributions from winter fuel payments will also assist them in providing vital support to older individuals confronting loneliness and vulnerability, as well as enabling the charity to sustain its services and expand assistance to vulnerable communities. Helen Callan, Chief Exec at Age Concern Hampshire, said, "During the winter months, many older people can find themselves increasingly isolated within the confines of their homes. Your donation of winter fuel payments has the power to create a significant impact, allowing us to sustain our essential services and activities, which are dedicated to easing loneliness and promoting well-being."
Pizza restaurant plans for Mother's Day. A city centre restaurant is celebrating Mother's Day by handing out free flowers. Three Joes in the square will be giving a bunch of daffodils to all mums who visit on Sunday, March the 10th. The restaurant opened in 2018, and Deputy Manager Wayne Locke said staff enjoy celebrating mothers every year. He said, "We are giving out free daffodils for each mum that comes in, which we're delighted to do. We love celebrating these things. We do this every year. It's nice for mothers to be recognised and that they choose places like this to celebrate. We're a great place to be and a friendly environment." Three Joes sells a wide variety of sourdough pizzas, including Cajun chicken with red onion, chilli, lime and coriander, and roasted flat mushroom pizza topped with caramelised onion, oregano, rocket and lemon. As well as pizza, they also sell macaroni cheese, fresh salads and sharers, including the charcuterie with cured meats and freshly baked dough sticks. For dessert, they have options including homemade lemon cheesecake served with sweet berry coulis and warm chocolate brownie with chocolate sauce and vanilla bean ice cream. They make their sourdough from scratch every day using caputo flour, and their pizzas are cooked in a wood-fired oven. For more, visit threejoes.co.uk/location/Winchester. And there's a lovely picture of them holding their pizzas and their flowers, looking very welcoming.
Art sale aid for refugees. Record numbers of professional and semi-professional artists will be exhibiting at an art sale to support refugees. The 2024 art sale in aid of Hampshire's Rural Refugee Network, RRN, and the John Badley Foundation, JBF, Emergency Refugee Fund, will include 200 works from more than 50 artists, with prices ranging from £20 to £10,000. The event on Monday, March the 4th, at Beedale School near Petersfield, will see pieces by artists such as Emma Hartley, Nick McMillan, Olive Wotton and Mark Wickham. Anne Tutt, chair of the Petersfield-based RRN, said, "We're delighted by the response. It shows that in spite of the terrible things happening in the world, there's still so much compassion out there. The money raised will help RRN support refugees with, among other things, language lessons, employment training and accommodation. Will Goldsmith, head of BDale, said, "Our JBF Emergency Refugee Fund enables young people to attend BDale's senior and prep schools, who've been displaced from their homes and had their education disrupted. The art sale will be held at BDale's school in Church Road, Steep, from 6 till 9 in the evening. Entry is free by ticket only, and if you want a ticket, call 0333 666 666.
Homes for older people. Winchester City Council is developing a strategy to meet the complex accommodation needs of its ageing population. Council leaders outlined their initial thoughts on how to tackle the issue at the Economy and Housing Policy Committee. It is predicted that Winchester will have 65.4% more people aged over 85 by 2036. The City Council will launch a consultation speaking to pre-retirement age residents, the elderly, estate agents, private landlords, partner authorities, developers and home providers to develop a clear strategy before presenting the first draft to Cabinet at the end of this year or early 2025. Karen Thorburn, Strategic Housing Manager, told the committee at Winchester Guildhall on Tuesday, February the 20th, "It's an awful lot of work to get where we need to be and meet the accommodation needs and aspirations of older people." Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "We have a social care crisis in this country. This is a complex problem that needs to be dealt with at a national and local level. This is a timely point to review the impact of an ageing population in our district. It is not just about care homes, it is about providing the right type of homes that people can move into and live in. When we give planning permission to a new place, it can be developed, so we are building properties that people can stay in. When we are looking at accommodation, we need to make sure that we have houses and areas where people can interact easily and not be locked up in a little box."
Thousands of fish died after sewage escaped. Thousands of fish died after raw sewage escaped into a stream for up to 20 hours. Southern Water has been fined a hefty £333,000 for the blunder after failing to respond to an alarm set off by faulty equipment. Scores of brown trout and other dead fish were discovered, totalling 2,000 deaths. The water company was sentenced at Southampton Magistrates Court after pleading guilty to a breach of environmental regulations. The case regarding the pollution and operation of Little Bull Lane pumping station was brought forward by the Environment Agency. The deadly leak on July the 21st, 2019, spilled untreated effluent into Shawford Lake Stream in Waltham Chase, near Bishop's Waltham. But the damage did not stop there, as the sewage flooded fields, crossing into the site of the YMC Fairthorne Manor Activity Centre. The centre had to cancel 1,000 bookings, with no water sports taking place for 10 days, for which they were compensated. According to the Environment Agency, the incident was a result of a pump failing. A spokesperson said, "When a second one wouldn't start, sewage and other hazardous substances were diverted up through two manholes across fields and into Shawford Lake Stream, leading to the popular YMCA Fairthorne Manor." In the days after the incident, July 2019, investigators from the Environment Agency found pools of dirty water and polluted matter and vegetation in local fields. The stream was cloudy as pollution spread across nearly 3 kilometres. Ammonia levels in the water were 25 times the legal limit. Richard Manning, Southern Water General Counsel and Company Secretary, said, "We are very sorry that this unacceptable historical accident in 2019 led to environmental damage. As soon as we became aware of this event, we took action to reduce its impact on the local area and have since cooperated fully with the Environment Agency's investigation, pleading guilty at first opportunity." In acknowledgement of our role, we have already compensated the YMC and set up a £140,000 grant scheme with the Groundwork South Trust to aid habitat improvement. Learning from this incident also led to a comprehensive review of our more than 3,000 unmanned pumping stations to ensure those at highest risk were fit for purpose, leading to a rolling programme of improvements to equipment and monitoring technology, which has already cost more than £13 million. Almost 5 years on from this incident, we now have a new leadership team and shareholders and are continuing to deliver our landmark turnaround plan at pace, ensuring improvements are achieved across the board, including tackling pollutions which have been slashed from 430 in 2019 to 358 last year, and a further dramatic drop is due to be announced shortly. And there is a photograph of these very sad dead fish lying on the ground next to the river.
Police probe cannabis factory. Police are still investigating a cannabis factory found at a Winchester City Centre nightclub. A large number of cannabis plants was found at Vodka Bar and Nightclub in Upper Brook Street on Monday, November the 20th. Police arrested a Winchester man initially on bail until February the 20th. That has been extended until May the 20th. A spokesman said, a 55-year-old man from Winchester who was arrested on suspicion of producing a controlled drug of Class B and acquiring, using or possessing criminal property has had his conditional bail extended until May the 20th. Our inquiries remain ongoing. Speaking after the plants were found, Inspector Matt Kirby said, we will continue to investigate what we have found to bring those responsible to justice. The reason why we take this kind of thing so seriously is because any production of drugs is linked to a hidden harm. Large-scale operations are often run by organised crime groups, who are often connected to very serious violence. Finally, we are very aware that our actions took place in a busy city centre. We have tried to minimise disruption as much as possible, and we'd like to thank the local community for their patience.
We don't want to see Disneyland on Itchen. I don't think we want to turn it into Disneyland on Itchen, was one response to plans for a Jane Austen statue in Winchester Cathedral Close. Austen expert Elizabeth Proudman's view was one of many shared on the design of a statue of the novelist at Winchester Cathedral. A meeting was held on Monday, February the 26th, where sculptor Martin Jennings was quizzed by members of the public. It is hoped the statue will be erected in 2025 in the Inner Close to mark the 250th anniversary of her birth in 1775. It is not the first time that plans for a Jane Austen memorial have been proposed. A previous statue plan was scrapped in 2019 after a public feedback. Mr. Jennings told the meeting, "This is a work of the imagination, as I must emphasise every work of art is. We don't know very much at all about what Jane looked like." Elizabeth Proudman, friend of Winchester Cathedral for 60 years and former chairman of the Jane Austen Society, said, "She was not a Winchester woman, she was a Hampshire woman. She wrote in Chawton and came to Winchester when she was ill and died here. She has a wonderful memorial in Winchester Cathedral. We go to her grave and we worship her. We don't know what she looked like, but we do know that she was a very private person. She despised publicity. This statue speaks for feminism, but that is not what Jane Austen was all about. I don't think any statue is appropriate for this part of Winchester Cathedral. The Inner Close is where the monks had a private area. It's a special place. I don't think we want to turn it into Disneyland on Itchen. I don't think the Inner Close is the place to attract a lot of lovely American tourists to come and have a selfie with Jane Austen." Mr. Jennings said, "In life, she may have been aghast at being represented in this way, but after death, she belongs to all of us. I don't think we have in any way invaded her private personality. She was sure of her worth as a writer.
Man jailed over false 999 alarms. A man who has repeatedly faced court after falsely calling emergency services has been jailed despite having a long history of mental health issues. Anthony Walters, 60, formerly of St John's Road, has been sentenced to 16 months in prison for two counts of breaching his criminal behavioural order. After a mental health assessment determining whether he was fit to plead, Walters pleaded guilty to breaking the terms of his order and wrongfully calling the emergency services 99 times between August 22 and March 23 and May and July of last year. Walters had conditions not to call 999 unless it was a genuine emergency. Charlie Gabb, prosecuting, highlighted the severity of Walters' previous 32 convictions, including a robbery and other breaches of criminal behaviour orders. Richard Martin, mitigating, said, "This is a defendant who clearly struggled for many years. I concede that previous convictions will make matters worse, but there should be a balance when one considers the mental health of the defendant. One can imagine that the level of help he will get in prison is not going to get him in a much better position come his release date. He's been gravely affected by the bereavement of his mother. It may be that there is an awakening in him and he can change. He wants to do something and try." Sentencing at Winchester Crown Court on Monday, February the 26th, Lord Justice Andrew Idis said, "You made 99 false calls to emergency services, often to the police, but also to hospital, sometimes saying that you had a gun, which you were intending to use on yourself, and sometimes making inquiries about guns. The effect of all that is very substantial diversion of scarce resources from people who desperately need them and into their being wasted dealing with you and your false emergencies." Walter's sentence was reduced from 2 years to 16 months after he was given full credit for his guilty plea. The Lord Chief Justice ruled against a suspended sentence due to his history of poor compliance. Calling out to the judge, Walters, who wore a navy suit, blue shirt and maroon tie, said, "Don't send me down, Your Honour, please. May I appeal it, my lord?" Walters must serve 8 months before his release, after which he will be on licence. If he reoffends, he will be recalled to serve the rest of his 16-month sentence and could be given more time.
Southern Water says sorry for data breach. Southern Water has apologised to customers in Hampshire after a data breach saw details, including national insurance numbers, dates of birth, sort codes and bank account numbers, stolen. Letters and emails have arrived at customers' homes in the last couple of days explaining what happened and what they should do now. On January the 22nd, an organisation on the dark web, which is an area of the internet used by criminals, claimed to have obtained data from the utility provider. The company raised the alarm on February the 13th and apologised. In recent correspondence, it said it had previously detected suspicious activity. An investigation has been launched, along with the National Cyber Security Centre, as well as other preventative measures. Water supplies were not affected, said the provider. Southern Water said it didn't know how many customers have been impacted, but estimated it was between 5 and 10%. It has assured customers that a link to Experian Identity Plus, offered in the most recent letters and emails in a bid to help people monitor potential suspicious activity, is safe to use. It gives 12 months Experian cover for free, as long as membership is activated within 2 months of getting the correspondence. Southern Water said it was monitoring the situation and invited customers with questions to contact it on 0330 303 0025. Earlier this month, Southern Water said, "Based on our forensic investigations, which are ongoing, we are planning to notify in the order of 5 to 10% of our customer base to let them know that their personal data has been impacted. We're also notifying all of our current employees and some former employees. We take data protection and information security very seriously, and in accordance with our regulatory obligations, we are making contact with anyone whose personal data may be at risk. The Information Commissioner's Office, ICO, also confirmed that it had received a report about the incident and was investigating.
Exciting pavilion nears completion. The new pavilion at King George V Playing Fields in Winchester is nearing completion. The project, funded by the City Council alongside the Football Foundation, replaces two outdated buildings. It will offer six changing rooms and communal space. It also has solar panels and a green roof, which will improve thermal insulation, store carbon, reduce energy consumption, and reduce water runoff. The pavilion will open to the public this spring. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Community and Engagement, said, "It's very exciting to see the significant progress which has been made at this modern facility, which has incorporated energy-saving measures to ensure that it is greener and a more sustainable building. It will be open to the public soon." Meanwhile, there is a campaign to have the pavilion named after Southampton football legend Terry Payne. A World Cup winner, Mr. Payne grew up in Highcliffe and played for Winchester City before moving to Saints. And this story is presented with a page of photographs, including photos of the new splendid building, and also a couple of photos of Terry Payne, including one of him, a brilliant black and white photograph from 1966 of him leaping like a salmon to score against Leighton Orient.
Royal visit highlights new cathedral attraction. Visitors at Winchester Cathedral were in for a surprise when they spotted a rather different royal visit. Well-known historical rulers, including Henry VIII, Elizabeth I, Mary Tudor, King Alfred and Queen Victoria, were spotted strolling around the cathedral grounds. The Royal Ensemble, composed of cathedral staff, including the facilities manager, commercial director and assistant curate, were dressed in regal attire sourced from local costume hire business, Hampshire Wardrobe. The event was part of a photo shoot promoting the upcoming Crown and Coronation light and sound show heading to the cathedral in March. One onlooker who saw the photo shoot said, "I thought I saw a ghost when I looked around, and there beside me was Henry VIII himself." The Crown and Coronation light show highlights the cathedral's royal heritage. It has been created by historic royal palaces. The light show runs from March the 4th to the 8th, and tickets must be booked in advance. And there's a wonderful photograph of them all looking quite solemn, I have to say. Queen Victoria is excellent. Elizabeth I has a very long, extremely curly red wig. Good luck. And Henry VIII is clutching a sword in a rather menacing manner, and everyone else looks wonderful, especially Mary Tudor, who looks very pious, holding her hands in a reverent pose.
And now, following the article I read about Southern Water, there is a response. A legal expert says the response is not sufficient. A legal expert has said Southern Water's response to customers following the cyber attack is not sufficient to compensate those whose data has been put at risk. Eleanor Coleman, a data breach solicitor at JF Law, said it is not sufficient to compensate clients properly for this breach of information. She said, "We are aware that there has been a cyber attack on Southern Water, the latest in a long list of cyber attacks on various organisations and companies in the last year. We appreciate that it is concerning for clients to find out that their personal and sensitive information has been subject to a cyber attack, especially when it relates to financial and banking information. We understand that Southern Water has offered Experian credit monitoring for 12 months, which we would recommend is a good option for clients to accept, but it is not sufficient to compensate clients properly for this breach of their information."
Work safety limits close GP surgery. A Winchester GP surgery suddenly closed due to not meeting work safety limits. Patients were surprised to call St Paul's Surgery on Monday, February the 26th, and be given the following automated message. Dear patients, in a rare event, we have had to close early due to exceeding work safety limits. Don't call this week if you have a medical query that can wait. Patients have been told to use 999 for life-threatening medical issues, call 111 for urgent issues that can't wait, and to submit any non-urgent queries online. The surgery in Allison Way, Oram's Arbour, reopened a limited service on Tuesday with IT problems continuing. On the news section of its website, the surgery also said that it was having major IT issues. The website reads, "We are experiencing major IT problems today regarding our clinical system, EMIS. We can only intermittently use our appointment system, consultations, and access medical history. The consequences of this is that patient appointments today will be delayed."
Care Charity calls to say, "We love our 40th." A care charity has released a single to celebrate its 40th anniversary. Brendan Care announced the release of a version of "I Just Called to Say I Love You" by Stevie Wonder, with performances from staff, residents and members of the community club contributing the vocals. The ballad was first released in 1984, which was the same year the charity was founded by Robert Gibson, a GP from Winchester. Wonder's track contains the lyrics "I Just Called to Say I Love You and I Mean It from the Bottom of My Heart," which Brendan Care says sums up everything that Brendan Care stands for. Rebecca Spicer, well-being manager of Brendan Care, said, "Our anniversary single started as a seedling of an idea in a team meeting last year from our well-being team. This was then shared at one of our 40th anniversary planning meetings. In early January, we coordinated dates and produced a plan to begin the creation of video and sound. We knew with this video and single release, we wanted to capture natural engagements between residents, volunteers and colleagues, the kindness, support and love that we know we see in our homes and clubs every day. Literally going with the flow to capture that what was happening, this included visiting donkeys, harmonica playing, resident choir sessions, reminiscence, walks in the garden, chair-based dance and flower arranging. All very ordinary activities in our homes, as the song words also suggest, just another ordinary day." The single was produced by Martine Martin, head of membership at the charity, and the accompanying video was made by University of Winchester student Ellis Cord. It was released on February the 14th to positive feedback, with responses provoking emotional moments and memories. And there's lovely photographs of all the residents sitting there, adding their tune, their songs to it, and one with the headphones and microphones doing the full recording.
College unveils plant entry for the Chelsea Flower Show. A Hampshire college has launched its entry for this year's RHS Chelsea Flower Show. Sparsholt has teamed up with the Colgate Seabrook Foundation to create the exhibition Plants, Roots and Branches, and that's spelled R-O-U-T-S, and branches. I guess there's something clever going on there. They celebrated with the launch of the garden with a design unveiling, joined by Sparsholt College alumni and industry professionals. The garden has been designed by Sparsholt's multi-triple medal-winning team, including Chris Bird and Lucy Lewis, in celebration of its 125th anniversary of horticultural training. The exhibit will explore the history of plant introductions from Hampshire, while celebrating the impact of influential horticulturalists and the role the college has played in their professional growth. It features a plant breeding laboratory area and a nursery growing area, home to nursery beds, information boards and five RHS Chelsea Plant of the Year 2024 entries, including Cynomales Lemon Sorbet, Mahonia Meteor and Philadelphus Petite Perfume White Pearls. The second half of the garden has a classroom area set up with desks and bookcases, And finally, a workshop break room area, complete with seating, lockers, filled with overalls and muddy boots. All four areas surround a central demo shed with a corrugated panel roof made of recycled plastic. Quinn Walling, horticulture student, said, "The launch has been an interesting networking event. We've got to meet lots of local plant breeders and past students, and it's been really enjoyable to meet possible future employers. I can't wait to see how the garden all comes together and the finished project at the end of it. We've got a lot of landscape construction skills now, which has been fun to learn." Lucy Lewis, horticultural lecturer at Sparsholt College, said, "Plants, roots and branches is about celebrating 125 years of education at Sparsholt, influential horticulturalists and all the plants that they've bred, and what exciting career paths our students may take in the future. Our aim for the garden is to inspire young people or career changers to look at a career in horticulture and all the potential interesting places they could go. It's more than just lawn mowing. The amount you can do with a foundation in horticulture is phenomenal. This will be my 7th RHS Chelsea Flower Show, and it's a fantastic experience to share with our students. I'm excited to be taking more of a leading role this year and could not be prouder of our team as we start to prepare for the show. The horticulture team is encouraging those with a link to horticulture at Sparsholt College to share their stories. And their article is accompanied by a photo of the winning team, all, of course, wearing their muddy boots.
Hospital plan would improve 999 care. Medics have claimed proposals to invest up to £900 million across hospitals in Hampshire would significantly improve the safety and quality of care for people in an emergency. The proposals, which are open to public consultation until Sunday, March the 17th, would see a new specialist acute hospital developed on the current Basingstoke Hospital site or near to Junction 7 of the M3 at Dummer. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital would have its A&E unit and maternity unit downgraded. Much public reaction has centred around fears that lives would be lost if patients were being taken to the new hospital along the often congested M3. The new hospital would see and treat people suffering from strokes, heart attacks, life and limb threatening illnesses and injuries, and bring a separate children's emergency department to Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust for the first time, as well as a critical care unit for adults and neonatal unit for babies. As well as emergency care, it would also provide services for those who need highly specialist treatment, more complex planned care, or operations where patients might require critical care afterwards. Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer for the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, said, "Some services, like those for heart attacks, strokes and major accidents, are already only provided by one of our hospitals. Bringing all our specialist and emergency services together into one site would enable us to provide better and safer care. A maternity unit led by specialist doctors would be able to have consultants on site for more hours than either Basingstoke or Winchester Hospital currently has. Bringing both hospitals' existing neonatal units together onto one site would mean the unit would see a high enough number of babies each year to look after those with more serious health problems than either hospital can currently. New one-stop outpatient clinics, plus a brand new cancer treatment centre providing a comprehensive range of treatment, therapies, advice and information, would also be located at the new hospital." Dr. Nick Ward, Interim Chief Medical Officer at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We know we can't keep our services organised the way they currently are. Our population is growing and getting older, meaning people's health and care needs are changing. We believe that our proposals give us the best possible chance of addressing those challenges for the future. To find out more, attend an event, or complete the questionnaire, go to the website hampshiretogether.nhs.uk. The consultation is open until March 17.
Take 10 Cheshire Theatre's new writing festival. Showcase for writers, a joy. Winchester Dramatic Society was founded in 1863, and the organisation has come a long way since the first production of Macbeth. In the 1960s, the company moved to its current home, the former St Peter's Church in Winchester. Since then, there have been some 350 productions by the 200-strong company, mainly at the Chesil Theatre, but also at Winchester's Theatre Royal, as well as other places around the city. This month's production was the result of a competition which has its roots in 2008, when 10 writers had their short plays performed at the Chesil Theatre on February the 25th. This has now grown into a national competition, but the format remains the same. The plays were very loosely linked by the title of the production, Snakes and Ladders. The link was somewhat, sometimes tenuous, but each short play certainly touched on different aspects of the human condition: romance, ageing, loss, disjointed families, revenge, misconceptions, and of course, humour. The humour was superbly embodied by the cast of Alan Has Left the Chat. The comic timing and the interaction between the two main characters, played by Tez Cook and Peter Andrews, was certainly a highlight. Another link between the plays was that each one was delivered beautifully and with the passion that the emotion of the subject matter evoked. The acting was excellent in what might be for many actors an intimate and possibly intimidating venue. Many theatres create a cocoon of light and sound for those on stage, but in this intimate room with no microphones, it was not a luxury that was afforded to the cast. When Mary Mitchell broke the fourth wall and described the life of her character, she did so with skill and empathy. She walked that fine line and portrayed both humour and sadness with equal skill, all in only 10 minutes. Jeff Dodsworth played his part so skillfully in Moksha Patam that I and several other audience members around me were genuinely concerned for his well-being and wondered if the actor himself had been taken ill on stage when his part required his character to slowly react to a poisonous cucumber sandwich. It was also a joy to see actors of all ages in the cast, the beauty of the format of numerous short plays. The superb performances from young Ben Tyler and Arthur Wood prove that the future of the company is in safe hands. Was a thoroughly enjoyable evening in this sellout performance, and there's wonderful photographs of sort of various of each of the scenes, about six of them actually on this page, and frankly I'm rather regretting I didn't go.
University and Film Festival join forces. The University of Winchester has formed a new partnership with the organisers of the city's film festival. The two organisations have worked together for several years, with the new agreement seeking to expand and formalise the relationship. Winchester Film Festival began in 2011 in a basement beneath a cafe in Jury Street, where it screened 15 shorts by local filmmakers. The festival now selects from thousands of award-winning short and feature-length films from 5 continents and hosts world and regional premieres. The university supports the festival as a sponsor and venue for screenings, with students taking part in many aspects of the event, from planning and judging to working front of house. Festival director John Hayes said that around halfway through its life, the city's annual celebration of cinema ballooned in size, saying, "Since that point, the festival could not have functioned without the support of the university and its student volunteers. We've worked with students from many different departments, including journalism, music, marketing, as well as film production. It's a two-way process and everyone benefits. This year, students at the university have embarked on a new module which will require them to organise their own film festival. The event will involve students from other courses, including events marketing. Among the films to be screened at the festival will be the third year students' final projects. Bob Ferrin, programme leader for film production at the university, said, "The Winchester Film Festival is a marquee event each year in the film calendar of Winchester and Hampshire. Over the past 10 years, the festival has provided numerous opportunities for students to gain hands-on experience in organising and running a film festival, as well as networking opportunities for our students to meet filmmakers from all around the globe."
Children's slide stolen from outside Village Hall. A children's slide has been stolen from outside a Hampshire Village Hall. The item was taken from Itchen Abbas and Avington Village Hall on Monday, February the 19th. Christopher Langford, chair of the Itchen Abbas and Avington Village Hall Management Committee, said a replacement will cost around £2,150. He said, "Our 20-year-old wooden children's playground climbing frame had been assessed as unsafe and we have taken it down, leaving the stainless steel slide on the ground out of the way. At about 8:40 a.m. on Monday, a red Vauxhall flatbed truck drove into our car park and parked near to the slide. Two men got out, loaded the slide onto their vehicle and then drove off quickly without securing it. The 5-minute theft was captured on CCTV and the truck has the registration FE58DUH. We appeal to anyone with information about this vehicle to contact the police. We were saving the slide to reuse on a new playground climbing frame. It only has a scrap value of about £40, but will now cost over £2,000 to replace and puts the whole replacement climbing frame in jeopardy." A police spokesperson said, "It was reported that a playground slide had been stolen from outside the Itchen Abbas and Avington Village Hall on around 8:30 a.m. on Sunday, February the 19th. Officers have launched an investigation and anyone with information is asked to contact 101, quoting 442-400-74209.
Vigil held for Ukraine war. Courage and Hope, as candlelit event, marks 2 years of war. Dozens of Winchester residents came out in support of Ukraine at a vigil held at the city centre. The candlelit event in Abbey Gardens on Saturday, February the 24th, marked 2 years since the invasion of Ukraine. Organised by the Winchester Ukraine Cultural Association, the vigil took place following a commemorative concert at the Arc on Jewry Street and saw speeches given by members of the association. This was followed by a sermon and poetry readings before people were invited to sing the Ukrainian national anthem. Yulia Dubuik, chair of Winchester Ukraine Cultural Association, said, "It was so amazing. So many people came to the performance at the Arc. The venue was full. We've cried a lot today. And at the vigil we felt a lot of release and grace and we're really grateful. To be here at the centre of Winchester, which has such a great history, and crying for those who can't be here, it's amazing. All this support, all these people, all these hugs means the world to us." Vice Chair Olku Roniv added, "The turnout has been really nice. I'm living separately from my host family, but they came to support us and my husband came for the whole day, which is really important. A lot of hosting families have been really supportive. They're not just hosts, they are families for us too. When our children went to school and when we started jobs, we saw lots of support and we're so grateful to the government for giving us a chance to bring our children here and to keep them safe." The Reverend Canon, Dr. Roland Rehm, gave a short sermon at the vigil where he spoke about his family history. He said, "It is a great privilege to come out and speak among people who show so much courage and resilience, to see that they haven't given up hope and to contribute to the sense that others are with them and caring about them." And there's a lot of photographs. There's a wonderful one with a group of people holding candles as they mark a minute silence for the 2 years of the war. And then there's Olya and Julia and Olena with the large blue and yellow Ukraine flag, and various Dr. Rehm giving his sermon, and various other of people there supporting this wonderful Ukraine gathering vigil.
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Bye.
And Andrew Napier.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Keith Vinson, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.